From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Churches were built all over Georgia during the late 18th and early 19th centuries. They were social and spiritual centers from across mountains, the Piedmont, to the swamps and pine barrens of South Georgia. They're of all dimensions and denominations, and some have lasted down the years in fine shape. Some require restoration. Those buildings prompted Sonny Seals and George Hart to publish Historic Rural Churches of Georgia. The book inspired the Saving Grace series on GPB.
So then it came a time that we wanted to have our own church so we can worship in freedom. So you got the first African Baptist church. We built it ourselves, our ancestors. Storm would come, maybe tear the building down or whatever, but we'll build again because we wanted God. Save up our money. And religion is a major part of our culture.
Sonny Seals is producer of the series and joins me in the studio to talk about Georgia's history through rural churches. And Sonny, thanks so much for being here.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Documenting these historic churches began with your own family story. What happened? What was the beginning?
Yeah, people always want to know, how in the world did this get started? I got into history late in life. George and I are lifelong friends, and every now and then we just take some time off and we just head out and hit the back roads and stumble around farmhouses and old towns that had disappeared, and cemeteries covered with weeds and that sort of thing. We thought it was exciting for some reason. So on one of these trips, went through this town that is just about gone. It was called Powelton. And there was this, there were two churches in Powelton. Actually, one of them turned out to be the oldest Baptist church in the state of Georgia. The center of that church was built in 1798. On the other end of what had been a town was a Methodist church, and it had some old graves in there. And I walked up to one of them like I always do, and there was this Confederate gravestone, and the name was William D. Seals. And so I thought, well, I have to be kin to this guy, I think, because there are not many, many people with the surname Seals. It's fairly unusual. So in today's age of technology, all I had to do was go get on the computer, and I didn't know where I came from. I could only go back to my grandfather. And very quickly, I found out, wow, I came from England in the mid-1600s. We came into Virginia, and we came down through North Carolina and South Carolina, and we fought in the Revolutionary War, and they were giving away land in Georgia after they took it away from the Indians. And so we said, yeah, we'll take some of that. And we did in 1785, settled into what is now Hancock County, you know. And I found out that story is not unusual at all. It's very typical.
And that started this odyssey. It's interesting that this is that was a digital sort of plant that opened up this world to you. And what you've done is very analog, going to rural churches in Georgia, across Georgia, seeing them, some of them faded in time, some of them empty of congregations, others not. But what did these tell us? The churches have largely lost their position as communal gathering spaces. What was its role historically?
Well, if you look at how Georgia got started, you need to look at some old maps. But after the Revolutionary War, remember this, the only land that existed that Georgia owned was down on the coast and a little bit along the Savannah River. The rest of it belonged to some other people called Creeks and Cherokees. Georgia was known as the debatable land. And so very quickly, we started acquiring, buying, stealing, choose your own verb there, all this land from the Indians, river basin by river basin. So by 1830, all the Indians were out of Georgia. And to that extent, Georgia happened almost instantaneously. So you had 40 million acres of virgin forest. Well, what do you do with that? How do you settle it? Well, the way they did, these settlers moved in on this free land, and they very first thing they did was set up a church. And the church was absolutely the center of everything. So didn't make any difference what the denomination was. The church served the function of community center, country club, dating service, law and order, and yes, some spiritual comfort.
Well, most of the churches you feature, they weren't built to withstand time in the same way as the old shrines and stone basilicas that pilgrims went to for many years. How many of them are lost or even beyond repair?
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Well, what you have to remember is, you know, you make do with what you have. And all they had in terms of building materials were trees and rocks. So that's where these churches were built. As an interesting side note, I think about this all the time. Thank goodness for the emergence of tin as an affordable roofing alternative. Hmm. Because if it were not for tin roofs, none of these churches would that we target would survive.
When did they start making churches with or tin roofs?
I'd say about 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, there was some form of shake roof or wood roof. But even if you use composition, you're going to get in trouble. The combination of tin and Georgia heart pine is very powerful. It'll last forever if you keep the water out of it.
Sometimes it's the congregation that is gone. It's not necessarily the church is degraded. They were built when rural communities still had industries and thriving populations. So looking at these churches, what did they tell us about those changes in the way our economy and society evolved?
Well, the churches reflect reality. And the reality is that as Georgia shifted from an agrarian society to an industrial society, there were pretty much massive migrations to where you had to go to get a better life. And if you think of Georgia in terms of agriculture, you have to think of it in terms of pre-Civil War, post-Civil War, and one word sums it all up, cotton. Mm. Cotton was at the root of a lot of dark history.
King Cotton.
Yes, King Cotton. And Georgia was almost a one-trick pony when it came to cotton. Well, the combination of a civil war, declining population, lowered prices, and the boll weevil just kind of did us in. So a lot of people left. It's that simple. When they did, there's nobody to go to church.
My guest is Sonny Seals. He's author with George Hart of Historic Rural Churches of Georgia. It's a beautiful picture book and also the series on GBB called Saving Grace. Well, Sonny, how many of the churches that you've chronicled have continually occupied with congregations and how many no longer hold services?
I'd say of the, we have over 200 churches now that we've researched and documented on the website. And I'd say roughly a third of them are doing well. They really are. They have vibrant congregations, and they don't need any help.
What qualifies for your study? Which years or what state?
All right. It's a good question. We say what qualifies for to be included on our website, the church has to be, the congregation has to be formed prior to 1900. The present structure has to be at least 100 years old. It has to be in a rural location, and we define rural as either in the country or in a town of less than 2,000. If we didn't stay rural, we'd lose our focus in a hurry. But the hard part of qualifying these is they have to have some historical architectural interest.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be something of the past left. A lot of these churches have just been overly modernized, and they don't work for us.
Yeah, these are some simple, beautiful rooms. In many cases, light and airy. There's a new episode of Saving Grace that features former President Jimmy Carter, his famous Sunday
yes.
school service at Marantha Baptist Church in Sumter County. People from all over the world, all over the country. But he also talked with you about his family church.
I would say for a long time, almost 100 years, after the Civil War was over, the African-American and white congregations worshiped on their own. Maranatha wanted to integrate our church racially, and so Maranatha was formed for that reason and also to permit women equal rights with men. So that has been our church ever since we joined it after the White House years.
That doesn't fit the common narrative of the South, an integrated church and also women part of it?
Well, if you think, you know, in terms of old churches, You have to think pre-Civil War and post-Civil War. Pre-Civil War, as President Carter points out, blacks and whites worshiped the same God. They sang the same hymns. They studied the same Bibles. They had the same services, and they might have been segregated in seating. Most of them were. After the Civil War, some sweeping changes happened in America, but certainly in the South, and Georgia was right in the middle of so much of that. And so through these old church minutes, we see a different view of history, a different interpretation of it. For instance, President Carter talks about his great-grandfather's church when he first came to Sumter County in 1852. The minutes of that church revealed that in 1870, this is fascinating to me, in 1870, 5 years after the Civil War, 40% of the members of that church in good standing were African American still.
Hmm.
Now, that's the same year they also, very peacefully but in an organized manner, decided they wanted to form their own church. And they did. In 1870, they left and with the assistance of some white people, because they needed all the assistance they could get. The Civil War was just desperate times for everybody.
So this church and these minutes, these are all pieces of history. But we also have in a lot of towns in rural Georgia, other relics of history. You have the abandoned factories and farms and stores that didn't survive and are now faded. Why, Sonny, should churches be preserved?
Well, churches are a special, I'm searching for the right word, a very special historical aspect of our history. And churches have the ability to give you a historical perspective that you can't get anyplace else, but churches have the ability to move people. They're important on a spiritual level that moves people for different reasons. Sometimes it's religious. Sometimes it's history. Sometimes it's genealogy. Sometimes it's the sheer beauty of the architecture and the simplicity of it. It moves different people for different reasons. But it's a very special part of our history. And to put it in simple terms, I ask the question, look at this book, look at these churches, look at these structures, look at these stories, and you tell me, are these historical treasures or are they relics of the past?
Sonny Seale, he's producer of Saving Grace. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Enjoyed
being here.
Saving Grace airs on GPB Monday nights at 9 and Saturday mornings at 10:30. And you can see photos of some of the churches and episodes that have aired at our website, gpbnews.org. Now, Saving Grace also tells the story of one of Georgia's greatest cultural treasures, the Gullah Geechee community along the coast. And the music you're hearing now is a 1926 recording of Kumbaya, as sung by Gullah Geechee man named H. Wiley. It's the first known recording of the song. The New York Times unearthed this recording from the Library of Congress.